Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
The recording starts now again after the ceremony, the Remembrance Day ceremony. It was, as I judged, just intrusive and inappropriate to podcast with people. Oh, anybody, because it was really their thing. I had a sort of focus, I had things in their mind. Just an inappropriate thing to do, so I'll just give a record, a rerun of what happened. Sort of starting with the bus, which took us up from the local village down to Penrith in the valley here, the flat area, some 200 metres lower down the mountain, the escarpment, to so the little bus took us and three other people, myself and three other people, down to the dog track. So there's in Penrith, they still have the tradition of racing dogs, and the dogs ran around this track. So this is a large open area of Penrith, and that was taken over with a stand to march past, and an epitaph and a poppy park. There's thousands of poppies and boards up with the various war dead from World War I come along. That's what I thought I would mention the bus to start off with. So the bus is a bus provided free by the council, and it's a community bus, and people volunteer to drive it. And there's a large population of people volunteering on different areas. So I had a chat with this person. He'd been the driver. He'd been volunteering for 35 years. And basically, there's a series of buses, and if an organisation needs to move somewhere, they can call for free transport. And the transport's provided free. The bus drivers volunteer their time and do a basic instructions loop. And I suppose the council would also pay for the upkeep of the bus and the insurance and all that, that type of stuff. And he was also volunteering for a number of organisations, including the Lapidary Club. And this is bus driver. I got to chat to him for a little bit before we took off. But Lapidary is a fairly big, amazing thing happening out here. And this is actually just getting gemstones and polishing them up. And it's not for, I suppose, decoration or for jewellery, or although people have it. And there's people have a passing fancy in having gem collections. It's more the community aspect, people coming together, giving their, sharing their expertise on how to actually polish up gems and polish surfaces and collect and observe things. It gives them a very much, I suppose, a stronger connection with some more rocks on the ground that people either walk over or buy or put on jewellery and stuff like that. It's a different dimension. And I had known this, as a scientist. I was at school, I wanted to polish up a particular, I think an optical fibre or something like that, and I dropped in at the local Lapidary Club, which is a little beat up house, used to be opposite the station. G'day. Hi. So you go into this little beat up shack, and it's absolutely buzzing with people and volunteers and people rushing around. It's a pretty absurd thing to see. And he told me that that shack was on valuable council land. So the council has given the Lapidary Society a, another place way out, this sort of farmland out around St. Mary's, which is actually closer into the city. But it's an interesting aspect, and there was yet another aspect of it, and went down to the Paceway, as it's called, the doggy track, and it's sort of very familiar things that often in towns, if you've got a camp in a town, where they assign you to bivouac, because there's toilets there, is Paceways. So I've done a few camps where the central organisations have been in the middle of this old country racetrack. And I do remember when it comes to, you always have to do a fitness run, you have to qualify, you have to run so far, do so many push-ups and all that type of palaver. So we didn't have to do it this time. But I do remember going to these pretty amazing old outback racetracks, and the officers would sit up in the stand and have a bet as they ran everybody else in circles. It was just enough. I think it was a 5 kilometre. You had to do a 5 kilometre run, which is a pretty tough thing in the heat and all that type of stuff. So they used to sit around. So it did bring back memories. And the what's happening is that all the old guys are getting too old to march. You know, the legs just won't take them for it. And even though it was a really short march, it was standing up and all that type of stuff. And of course, it's not explained all that well, and so no rehearsals. Oops. So, of that group of three, only one actually marched with me, who is the actual treasurer, and he's a granddad. Still quite a sprightly person, 5 grandkids and all that type of stuff. And so we were basically just going through it, formed up with these really pretty old people. I think one or two, there was probably one World War II veteran, a lot of Vietnam, a lot of submariners. For some reason, submariners are sort of the cheeky form of the Navy, and they always keep together. And we formed up in a rank of 8, it's only about 10 ranks deep, so that would have been 80 people, but it wasn't. It was probably like 60 something or other. So it must have been that number. It was a fair number of people, and there was the only one person in actual full uniform. Everyone else was in just basically suits and standard stuff, and everyone was given a poppy. I made sure that you were a Red Marimbra's poppy, because this is one, I don't know whether this overseas, I think there's a fair number of Australians which actually got killed in Flanders, and part of the natural thing that occurred over all these sort of battlefields is that after the guns stopped, after a while, there'd be these poppies. So the poppies are a symbol that even today we have for remembrance. Let's look at how we get across here. Oh yes, I've rebuilt the station. Oops, coming back here. And you can hear this beep. That's a Australian crossing. There's a beep to help blind people cross. I think they would have it overseas here. And it's if you can't hear, it's actually a bump. So it's, you know, all the way up, and it's a wheelchair accessible, and the actual crossings have, except for the new crossing, they put it up at our district section, has these little bumps or guidance bumps for blind people. And apparently they're all slightly different diameter and different things. There's actually a full language of bumps on your feet, but few blind people actually know that. So we formed up, and let's see, I think the military actual people came across. That's telling you to go. The military people formed up to move across, and then we marched. It's pretty amazing that as soon as the orders came through, I was really conscious of my head being held, not by anybody, but perhaps by thing of looking straight forward and not either side, and that I noticed that warts expression went from my face, the march, and I should say that the bloke in front of me couldn't keep step. It was a basic. So I think it's pretty amazing to see people do refine steps. I'm going to have to stop at the moment. Starting recording again as I've actually entered Penrith Station out of the wind, and out of the wind of the traffic, having crossed and purchased an Opal card. So these are these little electronic cards. One wonders whether there's actually, there must be information stored on the card. So for a particular card, it can store thousands of trips, the time, date, and all of the trips and all your payment history of the entire trip. So it's a pretty intrusive little card as opposed to your normal ticket. It's an electronic card, and you can actually put it over your phone and read all the trips you've ever done. So I'm going up to Mount Victoria. I don't know if you can hear that at the background. Katoomba, then Medlow Bar, Blackheath, and Mount Victoria. So there you go, we're just back at the Paceway with all the guys. The majority of them are pretty like me, most wearing hats because there is some really hot sun. People got a phone call that the actual battlefields in France, which we're remembering, are under an inch of slushy snow at the moment. We're just, connected in that sort of way. And people are fairly simple and quiet. And it was, very interesting to chat with people. We can have actually some quite detailed, interesting chats as you're going along. Oh, yeah, so I've just, I've just seen a set of new apartments opposite. So Australia's just populating and booming and all that type of stuff. So we all we marched in. It wasn't very far, much behind the actual real military. And it's interesting to see them with their new little styles. They're almost like Nerf guns. They're so small. And the actual cartridges, look at high capacity cartridges for them, and they'll be all empty. I think you can actually see the rounds inside them from the outside. But they're all slightly goldy, sort of brown. They're not black, they're not green, they're not dark, they're sort of soil coloured but slightly gold. So they look, definitely do look like a little plastic toy. And of course, it's a little bit hard. All the rifle drill. It's interesting that all the rifle drill is done with them still held with the sling on. So it's interesting to see that. And so a quick march, and of course when the veterans, of course I'm not a real veteran, I've only 15 years serving locally in here, compared to the I don't know the number of people who've actually been in combat situations. I really don't know in that group, but it was quite an amazing feeling, because as soon as it came on, all that the sort of general sort of calm that comes over you after military orders, I can't quite describe it. It's this extreme calm that comes over to you, concentration, and you are looking straight forward. It's amazing that my head was looking straight forward, and the body and the feel and the march as you go along there. It's a sensation I can't quite describe. And then we marched up to past the dais. So there's a dais and a little platform, which is a sort of a makeshift cenotaph, and sort of the Australian and New Zealand flag there. And there's sort of a big round of applause from the dog watching stadium. Everyone is up in the sort of a sports stadium in front of the finishing post. And as you might pass, there's this cheer, sort of clapping, and everyone, there's that sort of sense, and it's hard to describe what it was. It was a sense that I definitely felt when the people cheered the veterans, and you were marching inside the veterans. There's that feeling that went inside, and then you went up the top, went past, and then the military clothes, and this poor naval person
was still. The next train to arrive on platform 3 goes to Mount Victoria. First stop, Emu Plains, then all stations to Springwood, then all stations to Katoomba, then Medlow Bath, Blackheath, and Mount Victoria.
So he was still sort of strange how he was in a sort of still in a military sort of framework, tried to dismiss them all, just fell apart and went out. And then I went up into the stands, felt uncomfortable, saw my friends at the top, at the front, and stood with them, opposite the sort of around to the side of the dignitaries, watching all the stuff. And there was, I suppose, a few highlights for me. Was the sort of like a almost having your ear pushed through the person, the minister in charge of the war memorial, the head of the war memorial, spoke to us and over whatever it was, and there's a big screen with him. This is Brendan Nelson talking about him. But after a while, the same sort of jargon just becomes jargon about the sort of sacrifice, blah blah, and Western democracy and stuff like that. And I sort of am very bit dubious myself about. I would say that the World War One, the German side was wrong, but I would say almost equally the British side had a lot of funny ideas that is involved. So the actual senator for the region, who used to be the defence secretary, is now the foreign minister, spoke to us, and it was pretty interesting. You know, the actual facts. You sort of forget that in World War One there was a population of 4.1 million, and out of that population, at the largest possible stretch, you could have 1 million Australians able to go to war. Yeah, that's if everyone dropped everything and went to war, dropped all the farms, dropped all the factories. We just evacuated Australia, and all able people went to war. But instead of 1 million people, there was 470,000 people went to war in World War One, and actually a staggering 360,000 Australians went to Europe. So that's actually quite a reasonably sized land army. So I think it was. Get me wrong. There's sort of an unusual percentage of sort of British conflicts involved, and so really everyone came across. And then there was 60,000-70,000 died in World War One, and a staggering 70,000 died within 10 years. Oh, here's the train going. I have to stop talking about. Well, hopefully this is the conclusion. As I was on the train carriage coming up to Glenbrook, and you can probably hear the cicadas, which come out on odd years. They come out at 21 years, they come out at 23, 19, 17 years, on prime number years. Oh, and yep. Putting the Opel card, came all the way through here, and from what I remember, I was up to just discussing the sheer magnitude and insanity. And then there was one day in 24 hours, 5,530 Australians died in Fromelles. It's a really disastrous day for us. We were came out of Gallipoli, fighting the Turks, and that was easy. And then we went up against seasoned Germans, and got completely mowed down. So there are these days, and it's obviously has deeply affected us. So that was a good talk by Maurice Payne, who was the old defence minister and now the foreign minister. There was laying of the wreaths. So these are wreaths and of giving books, books to schools when you in about a third or a quarter actually books wrapped up to give to local schools. I suppose it's a more sensible tradition. Then there was for the Indigenous inclusion, acknowledgement of country, but also there was a section there where someone, an Aboriginal person in sort of traditional dress, played the didgeridoo. That was nice. And then, because it's a joint Australian-New Zealand commemoration, Anzac commemoration, for some reason, there's Anzac Day, but even Remembrance Day, it's always all the rumours emerged together. There was Maoris who did the haka, and there's sort of clapping after that. And of course, the haka still is extremely scary stuff. Especially, I don't know if you see the haka, they put their fingers down and they waggle their fingers downwards, and everything looks really, really threatening. And it's sort of a beautiful thing. There was to be the RWF flypast, but all our meagre little air forces off overseas doing things. They couldn't spare any during the month of November, which obviously is the Marines month. They couldn't spare any planes or any Hercs for fly paths, because everything is assigned operational, which is just as well. A corporal sang the New Zealand national anthem, which is rather beautiful, because there's the first verse in Maori and the second verse is in English, and then someone else sang the Australian national anthem. Then there was a few prayers, and then the 11th hour came, and so we had the minute of silence, which is quite a touching, quiet thing, because it was absolutely dead silent. You could hear the birds and everything go. And then at the end of the 11th the minute, there was the various bugle calls for Reveille and the last post and stuff like that. But after that there was the ring of the bell, which is the bell from Glenbrook Church, which is where we're at, and it's been taken down by the Historical Society, because that was rung at the end of World War I on the 11th of 11th. There's great celebration throughout Glenbrook, and everyone was hugging each other and stuff like that, and they rang this church bell, and they read from someone who is a person who used to be a neighbour from me, who recalled how this bell chimed at the end of World War One, and then it was basically a community emergency bell, so if there was bushfires or any threats, people would listen to it. Of course, it was replaced in World War Two. The bell was taken down and replaced with an air raid siren. Of course, the air raid siren was used well into the 50s to sound bushfires. So this is the story, and I've just actually walked past Jim Meyer's house on the way back home, and he is the historian who has worked there, and so this local thing has beautifully gone into legend, and there's a bit of coherence, and then this Poppy Park, which is basically pretty much the centre of this fairly large oval, have hundreds of, I'd say, up and around, I had to calculate, probably 100,000 poppies up around there for all the Australian World War I dead, and there was various panel after panel of everyone. These are boards with everyone who died in World War I, which is some 60,000 or 70,000 people. Now you can hear it's very loud here. The these are the cicadas, and these ones are the mountain cicadas. Occasionally you'll have the southern or the lower down cicadas. It's going to be hot through the rest of the day. If it's going to be cooler in the afternoon, you don't get the cicadas going. And this sort of things, these are little black things here. I don't know, the size of a thumb. And they are very good at camouflage. Whereas the ones which you hear the cicada noises that you're normally familiar with, it's just got the pulse wave come from much larger green cicadas, and those green cicadas don't stand much of a chance up here with the various kookaburras going around the make sure these ones have survived with the kookaburras, but the green ones get polished off really quickly. So in suburban areas we have kookaburras, they don't survive very long, and so that was the end of the ceremony. I suppose what I learnt is sort of it's a non-corporate, it's a non-government political thing, is the remembrance thing, and you have to be very respectful trying to work out. You don't want to invent too much new stuff to remember old stuff. It's one of these paradoxes that you got the new people in the block moving on who are forgetting and will pay attention to new stuff, but the older people just aren't in the framework of thinking of new applications and orientations to move forward. So it's quite educational for me just to settle it down and what's called melting into the civilian, it's called melting into the civilian population, or melting into that environment where you've got an open mind, open ears, and you pick up relationships as they go forward, and the actual I suppose structure of things, what people have after them, and so eventually put it down. I have to actually get into the act of conducting an interview and structuring an interview with people and do it. So what's happened is that the bus is going to pick up and probably deliver about now, but I caught the train instead and bumped into heaps of old students as I walked to the station, and as you walked with me as I've caught the station, and you've probably heard a few little things. You've probably learnt what an Australian traffic lights are like, the fact that we have, well, I don't know, there's a fair tilt at making things accessible for blind people in main areas where people point out the need. That's a bit there. You've learned a bit about oval cards. Of course, I couldn't talk. I actually sat in a quiet carriage and spoke with a 20-year-old girl who was going up with, I think, a broken leg and a drum. And I spoke to her about the drum and just checked that she was, I wasn't interfering, sort of. She was always, yes, I want to hear more. Now, this is interesting, they've got, just walking almost home, and opposite there's, so with her I talked about quantum mechanics and explained a bit about music and silicon. But you can see the poppies, and remember, it's poppies are in the school opposite. That's all for now. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.